Right. Doesn't sound like it's transmitting, Dick. It sounds like the Earth is the return path.
That is close to what I'm guessing also. Although, I think Wesley is saying he does have a sheet of metal on the sending end. I'm looking for that right now, the sheet of metal on the sending end. Is that what you're saying, Wesley?
No, no, no. What I was saying is I was the connection of that piece of metal from the beer can, what was the role of it? If, let's say, you utilize a 9-volt battery, you connect one transistor generator, let's say Colpitz generator or Meissner generator, then you connect the thyroid transformer, you create 4,000 volts. One wire of that secondary is never connected anywhere. Only one wire is connected to that long wire. Then it is being sent to the can on that plastic chair. There is no connection to the ground. And the rest you know. I'm trying to find out, yes, if this a counterpoise, or you do have a return path, and if there is a return path, then which way is that constructed? Now, Glenn got a set of information as well. I wonder what he can say about it as well. Dick, pick up.
Dick, another comment here, something very interesting, I must say.
Yeah, but the wire from the spark coil in the house does not go straight to the keg. It goes first to the automobile spark coil that's on the red chair in the backyard. It's going to the high voltage winding. The other side, let's call it ground, of that automobile spark coil is then going to this large metallic object, which happens to be a beer keg. And that is a large enough object to be a significant capacitance to ground. Therefore, I say the circuit with the one wire from the house, from let's call it the Tesla coil, the circuit is being completed through the automobile coil in the yard to that keg and the grounding of that keg, even though it's floating on a red chair. It is a partial ground. It's got a significant number of picofarad to ground when you're talking about a 5,000 volt, a 4,000 volt inductive kickback. Now, the primary winding of that automobile spark coil is a step-down transformer. You put 4,000 volts on the primary, you're going to get something close to 8 or 10 volts on the, on the secondary, you get something like 8 or 10 volts on the primary. That's the way it normally works. The 8 or 10 volts of sparking, of a kickback voltage on the primary goes into a full wave rectifier. The full wave rectifier feeds the motor that's also on the red chair. So by way of the capacitance to ground of the keg, the beer keg, it looks like a one-wire circuit, but I think it really is a two-wire circuit. And the Earth's return is supplying the second wire with a series capacitor, keg to ground. That's my first guess as to what's going on. Let's see what John sees on this one. KC2WGB, K2RIW on the TechNet.
KC2WGB, your description is accurate, except remember, too, the flyback transformer he's using, the output winding is connected to that wire going to the barrel, but the other end is not. So there's no ground path in the house either. So how is the coupling taking place?
Wesley is big.
Now that is a tough one. Glenn's got a comment on this one. Go ahead, Glenn.
Wesley is big. No calling idiot.
I think there's an RF path here, Dick, and I have actually another another interesting thing. I did a similar kind of an experiment on my own here on the side, and I was looking at the Wikipedia website, and they had something there on Tesla coils, and I was looking at that, and they have some interesting photos on there. If you look at, I don't know if you've seen that website at all, where they show this, like, violet lightning storm that comes out of these Tesla coils. Do you have any idea what actually that is, what that, you know, that lightning storm that comes out? Is it dangerous? K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Are there a number of websites with Tesla coils, some of them super-sized Tesla coils, like the one, that guy in Oklahoma who's got this set up in his backyard, where he's using a a pole pig transformer as a step-up device where he's running some ridiculous amount of prime number of megavolts, and he's getting a spark gap from the top of his Tesla coil from the toroid that looks like it can jump 10 feet. And some of those guys do put it inside of a garage, and it does jump 10 feet. You get a high enough voltage, you can jump those kind of feet. What is your question now? Is that real lightning? Well, is a breakdown of air lightning? I think it is. Maybe I'm not quite understanding your question, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2LIW.
What do you feel, Glenn?
WB2HWW.
Was that the, I built something, and it actually does create these kinds of arcs and sparks and things, and I was going to take some photographs of it, because rather than even try to describe what this thing is doing, I'd rather just show people pictures rather than try to describe it. But I guess my concern is that, is this something that's dangerous? And I figure if, you know, people are far enough away from it, but what's interesting is that in those photos, it looks like they're doing it indoors. I did my experiment outdoors, and I'd like to take some photos of it, but I'm afraid to get anywhere near this thing. I only left it on for about like 30 seconds because I was just, you know, because it could even just be causing RF interference. But getting back to what Wesley was talking about before, that, you know, I saw the video, and I've been seeing similar types of effects, and I'm wondering if some of that coupling over is, you know, is maybe electromagnetic radiation going over. In other words, there is some kind of RF there completing that path. Because I'm not sure it's all just, you know, regular, you know, circuit type of low frequency type of stuff, if you know what I mean, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
K2HWW.
Yeah, when you've got an inductive kickback of a great big high dV dT, a large change of voltage as a function of time, any stray capacitance can partially complete the circuit during the transient. And is that RF? Or is it impulse? That's a matter of definition. And by the way, those Tesla coils that you've seen on some of those YouTubes, are they dangerous? Absolutely. Some of these guys are...
The Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Some of these guys are putting many kilovolts into the primary. And although there's a huge step up and a current decrease, still, the total amount of current in the secondary is significant. Some of these guys will wear a metal suit to protect them, or they'll sit inside of a cage of some kind to protect them. There are kinds of Tesla coils where the secondary current at numbers like 100 kilohertz are kept in the milliampere region, and yes, you can put your finger on it and they're safe. But some of these things that these guys are making where they can arc 10 feet, is that safe? I say it is not. Would you be immediately electrocuted? I don't know, but I don't think you want to risk it. In your particular Tesla coil, Glenn, what's the maximum distance you have seen an arc? Because the total amount of voltage you're developing is indicative by how many feet the arc will go, and the size of your toroid, that is the upper high voltage probe of the Tesla coil, tells you how much capacitance it has to the universe, and that voltage times that amount of capacitance, 1/2 CV², represents a certain number of joules. And you start exceeding anything more than one joule, it has definite defibrillation or anti-defibrillation, if you know what I mean, capability. KC2QIQ, K2LIW.
Gates, I just have sent you another link, which is very easy. There's nothing on the table. It's a 9-volt battery connection, and you see the typical incandescent light, the lighting about 40 watts of 220 volts lighting up. That's the similar approach exactly to what we're discussing right now, and this one is out of doubt.
HWW, and a comment?
You want me to continue, Dick, or?
Am I being heard?
Yes, you're being heard. Glenn first, and then Howie in that order. Go ahead, Glenn.
Oh, is Dick second?
Okay, Dick, this experiment was basically a copper water pipe that was maybe, it's the half-inch type of copper water pipe, and using a broomstick handle that was about a little bit, the coils wound on it about 4,000 turns of number 20-gauge wire, and the primary of this thing was basically, you know, the bottom, say, 20 turns of coil to step up to like 4,000 turns along this big broomstick handle, and I was driving it with 100 kilohertz, 50% duty cycle, 50 volts peak to peak, and in the evening when the light went down, when I pushed this pole into the ground and drove the power supply, which was bolted to the copper pipe that was supporting this broomstick handle, I was getting arcs that were, I don't know, I would say they were probably about 100. It looked like a whole bunch of spidering of these, like, purple-violet type of arcs in the backyard going up into the trees. And I would say that the pole was at the closest point to any object where this thing was, like, arcing in midair. It was a minimum of 25 feet thick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
So if I understand you correctly, you had a bunch of purple corona discharge, but not real white or violet type, violet type of lightning bolt. The actual, the longest arc that you saw was how long? Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, if I had to guess, it's hard because I don't know from my point of view. I was sitting over probably a good 30 feet away inside of a, behind glass windows inside of like a Florida room when I plugged this thing in. The power going into this power supply, it was originally a 700-watt, you know, with a power factor corrected front end, 400 volts, and then going into an isolation transformer that was switching at 100 kilohertz. And I removed the rectifiers, and I basically just used a coupling cap into that primary winding. But those arcs were going up into some of those trees. I'd say some of them could have been as high as 50, 70 feet thick.
Hold on now. You saw a continuous arc in air of 75 feet where the arc was starting at one end, continuous 75 feet to the other end. That's a record. That doesn't sound right, though. Over to you, Glenn.
That's what's got to be so confused here. I mean, they weren't super bright, but it was kind of just like a... It wasn't one arc. It was almost like just a whole bunch of like spidering kind of arcs, and wasn't making any noise. That was another thing. It was just like these like dancing almost like arcs that were taking off in all kinds of directions, going into the tree in the backyard and all over. But when I first plugged it in during the daytime, there was nobody around. I couldn't see anything. At nighttime is when you could see it. It was when it got very, very dark. And then you could see it. It was just a big spidering thing. Some were going over by the pool. Some were running up the tree. All kinds of other areas. And I was afraid to even use a digital camera or anything. The only thing I did, measurement I was really able to make, was putting a power meter on the input of the AC line cord to see how much power it was using. And it was using somewhere in the order of like around 125 to 130 watts.
Sounds like corona and water vapor. Yes, it does. I won't say it's safe, but it doesn't sound like that. That's not a real Tesla coil-like spark. That's more of a corona discharge, I think, is what's going on. Howie wanted to make a comment. Go ahead, Howie. I'm watching the video right now.
Dick, you know, you're talking about this thing with the Tesla coil and a transistor and a 9-volt battery and running a motor. How much power can a 9-volt battery put out? And even if you have this circuit, as we described, there's got to be power loss, but there's got to be some resistance in the circuit. So I find it hard to believe that the motor can actually turn, because even if you go into a transformer, you can't amplify power. You've got to have the VA rating has got to be there. It's got to be the same on either side. So, you know, voltage times amps. So the amps may go down, the voltage will go up, and you come around. So how much power was a 9-volt battery delivering into this oscillator circuit, Dick? Because you got a 60 horsepower motor, how much current and how much power do the motor need to work? Go ahead, Dick.
Let me comment on this.
When you transmit power long distances across the United States, you step it up to numbers like 130 kilovolts. The voltage is high, the current is low. You send it for a long distance, then it goes to another step-down transformer at the other end, and eventually you bring it back down to 220, 110, whatever. This circuit that Wesley showed us a video of is doing exactly that. It's got a Tesla coil stepping up the voltage to a high voltage. It goes across a, maybe it's a 50-foot wire or a 100-foot wire that's 3 or 4 feet above the ground, parallel to the ground, into the backyard. The far end of that wire is going into a automobile spark coil hooked up backwards. It's going into the secondary winding. That's the step-down transformer. The primary winding had a full-wave bridge rectifier into some filter capacitors, and that in turn went into the motor. So he could, in theory, be sending 9 volts at one end through a Tesla coil across the wire to the backyard into this rectifier coil transformer network, which steps it back down to 9 volts to run the motor. The completion of the circuit in the backyard, the primary secondary winding of the automobile spark coil was looking at the high voltage wire. The other end of that winding was connected to the beer keg, which created a great big capacitance to ground to complete that circuit. So I think I almost understand that one. And when it comes to this new video that you just sent us, Wesley, he's now lighting up cold cathode fluorescent. He's lighting up compact fluorescent light bulbs.
Regular incandescent as well.
Exactly.
Dick.
I have often lit a fluorescent light bulbs by putting it near high voltage RF. Many of us have done that. And as long as you've got a high voltage RF circuit nearby, which creates a great enough E-field, fluorescent bulbs will light up quite nicely. Over to you, Wesley, N2XJN, K2RIW.
But when you walk across the rug, Dick, and you can light up the fluorescent bulbs. WS2N.
At the end of it,
transmissions.
At the end of it, he's taking a incandescent light, but light bulb about 40 watts, 220 volts, and he's holding it in the hands. The light bulb has a piece of metal. That's why I asked about the counterpoint. That is soldered into the light bulb. The light bulb is giving the light out of 9-volt battery. Now, this is effect of cutter. The guy, Borovin, who invented the cutter, he's got a patent from the Russian patent office, and he called it the new way of driving the transistor, because he couldn't put that this way. Now, what you have on the video is 9-volt battery, going to something that looks like the power supply from the computer, but it is not. What is inside is the board with the one transistor, and that board is powered from that 9-volt battery. Then you have something like a flyback, actually nothing else. And then the wires go to the coil with 3 wires. Then you have a high voltage coil inside, and that high voltage coil with 1 wire is connected to sort of configuration that we discussed from the previous video. Oh, so there is another coil apart approximately 3 to 4 inches. And then he takes the incandescent light bulb with the plate of the metal approximately 3 inches by 3 inches, that is soldered into it, and the light bulb gives light.
Welcome to the wet.
Yeah, you are, you were of the opinion that that sheet of metal that's on a light bulb is an incandescent light bulb. I'll admit it looks incandescent. I'm not convinced that that one is incandescent, Wesley. Go ahead.
T2YDT, can we give a little bit more time in between transmissions?
Welcome to the West.
Okay. Yes. What I can say is that this is definitely 100% incandescent light bulb at the end of it. I've been living in that countries, and the protection was absolutely the same. I can recognize that kind of light bulb. I was using it for at least 34 years in my life. Well, when I was young, probably I not, but let's say 20 years. Back to you.
K2YO. If that's truly an incandescent bulb, that one is hard to explain. Bernie, go ahead.
Wesley Net. Ha ha ha.
Two comments. First, Dick, can you check your K2RIW email, please? And second, is there any way that we can get these links so that we can see them?
Only Wesley can see them. Because Wesley is a big stupid idiot. You happy joining the club now, assholes? Number one asshole, Wesley now, you must be very proud.
Well, I have this link sent to Dick, and he can feel free to send it to anybody who is interested.
K2RIWWB2HWW. Dick, you copy?
Yes, I am. Howie, go ahead.
Well, the question I said about power, what's the power efficiency of that transistor? You got a 9-volt battery, yes? Now you got to change that into RF. So what's the efficiency? And then what's the efficiency of the other end? That's the question that I'm asking. I understand how you can raise and lower voltages and transmit it across great distances, but you're going from a 9-volt DC to an oscillator circuit. You now have to create power on that other end. You can't amplify. You know, you just can't get power from nothing, Dick. So that's the question. You know where I'm coming from?
The motor turns.
And the light bulb gives the light. Simple like that.
Yeah, but is this really true? I find it hard to believe some of these things. Because how much power, okay, what is the power requirement? What is the power requirement of that motor? And, okay, you got a 9-volt battery. What's the, the ampere capability times the voltage?
Welcome to the Wesley Net. Ha ha ha.
To Adrian. Here's the thing. I give a certain material for anybody to think. Nobody has to believe in it. You can view the material. I don't hide it. And it is just that I'm working to much deeper project right now for me just to present it to you guys and gather all of the stuff and get to the line mark and show it to you that it works. It works. And to Adrian.
Please, instead of just sending the link to Dick, send it to the club email list. That way we can all see it.
Let me put it this way, and to Exim. So far I was very much criticized for the subject that I'm discussing, and I simply... John, pick up.
Well, let me take it for a second, Wesley.
Just leave it to light.
Go ahead, Eric. Howie, forget everything that you know for a moment. Just imagine that the concept is getting what you might call free energy or borrowing energy from somewhere else.
there's some factor, X, that they're looking for that doesn't necessarily fit into the rules of physics as we know it at the moment. So the idea behind these discussions is that there's some unknown factor at work here, and they're trying to discover what it is, if it actually works. So if you can put that in your mind, then you can stop asking the questions the way physics normally presents itself to you. K2IW, K2 again.
I'm going to have to study this a little bit more. I'm also going to have to leave you guys. I'm sorry. There's some good provocative material here. This was TechNet number 1341 of the series that began in September of 1982. Try to be kind to each other, you guys. Mel, why don't you say a couple of closing words? I'm going to go away for now. We'll be back next week. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, very good. Well, next week I'll have something very interesting to tell everybody. I'm going for this pill camera, actually. I guess that's a capsule camera. I'm going to swallow on Tuesday. And for 7 hours, the thing is going to take pictures of the digestive system from the inside out. So I'll be very interested to see how they gather all this information, what kind of receiver, whatever. So we'll give you all the report next week. But it's important, really, you know, I balked at taking all these tests, but we'll talk about, I think, next week. I'm a little off the subject of ham radio, but I think it's important. 73s all, have a great week. This is K2KEY, good night.
Out for you, Mel. I hope everything works out for you.
Good luck, Mel. And I've worked with a guy who claims he was one of the inventors of the pill camera. I'm not sure. Bye-bye, you all. K2RIW, I'll be clear.
K2RIW, KC2Y to T.
Go ahead.
When you get a chance, though, definitely check that email, the message that Bernie sent you. And John, if you're around, if I can give you a quick landline, KC2YDT.
I did check Bernie's email. Bye-bye, you guys.
Yes, Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, Howie.
How are you going to let Kate down on me for? I'm only doing this because of my classical training and the engineering level. So, I understand it's free energy, but what happened to conservation? Any, you know, I have a hard time believing something without seeing it. That's all. And again, why, do you believe it's possible?
Let's put it this way. I know the rules of physics the way we know them. I know quantum physics the way it was 10 years ago. I know the way it is now. Okay, in the 40s, right, you know, this guy Arthur C. Clarke figured out that there's a place around Earth that nobody ever thought that they could ever reach. Jules Verne had some ideas that nobody thought were ever possible. If you want to go the way of Star Trek, one day there'll be something like dilithium. We haven't discovered it yet. Dr. McCoy's scanner will exist. We just haven't figured out how to measure the forces of life. So, keep an open mind.
I agree. Listen, things happen. It's just hard. You got classical training and you look at, maybe we're tapping into things. Look, I believe that we can communicate, that there are other ways of communicating, instantaneous communications by ESP or whatever. We really don't understand it. And also, I can also say, look what's happening to this planet right now. We may be going somewhere else pretty soon, Eric. AC2YDT for a quick call. ITD.
Be off in a second.
Okay, very good. Let me know when they're off, and I'll give you a call. KC2YDT, thanks for the call. Hey, just so you know, Eric, a lot of the guys in this local area playing with Moto Turbo, have you been aware of all the digital activity that's happening in the New York area?
Yeah, and you also know that it's really illegal and that they've put in for a rulemaking, a temporary authorization, which they still haven't given.
Not illegal, okay? I like the FCC to tell me to stop operating. You know, Eric, what is it? It's an on and off carrier. It's a pulse carrier, turning on and off carrier with modulation. Just because it may not, the rules allow you to experiment. I mean, I wish people would understand it. If nothing, what's the difference between that and D-Star, Gauss Minimum Ship Gain? Because you got two time slots, you have an on and off carrier, you have an on and off signal with a pulse, and it's a time, and it's clocked to the repeater's output.
Hang on a second, I'm going to read you something. All right, let me get it up here. And, here we go. All right. ARRL files petition requesting for a temporary waiver with regard to VHF voice and data emissions. All right, let me get a drop.
Oh, at the FCC, I already spoke to Dick Anderson at the ARRL, but go ahead and read it.
On Tuesday, March 15th, the ARRL filed a petition for rulemaking and request for a temporary waiver to authorize the use of single time slot, time division multiple access, emission in the amateur band and above 50 megahertz. Wherever multiple time slot TDMA is authorized, petition asks the FCC to allow those amateurs who are presently using a Motorola narrowband digital land mobile system commercially marketed as Motorola Turbo to be used legally, because some restrictions in the Part 97 rules, the TDMA repeaters, which are multiple time slot devices, are legal, but the mobiles and portables are not, because the emissions used are single time slot TDMA and are not authorized anywhere due to the admissions designator. Okay? So there you go.
It's a bureaucratic problem, Eric. That's all it is. I would like to see the FCC tell someone it would wind up in the courts, because what's the difference between two time slots and one time slot when you get down to it, just because somebody forgot to put the X in the after the first letter? Come on. Ooh. I don't know why people, I mean, yes, well, they will change the rules. The FCC is going to make this 100%, and right now, it doesn't really matter. People are using it.
Right. But, well, you know, the amateur community is a law-abiding community, and right now you're operating illegally. You know, you can have your personal opinion, but that's the way the law is written. Until it's changed, it's illegal.
That's right. Well, tell you what, there are hundreds of people breaking the laws. And by the way, wait a minute, are you telling me, look, the FCC rules also say you're allowed to run pulse code modulation? It's almost like running break-in CW. Even the FCC has said that there's no real issue here. It's just that it wasn't put into the rule. Hey, also Part 97 says that amateurs are supposed to be able to experiment with new technologies. I mean, if you got to get permission every time, this ain't like the 1960s where it took years to get, in the 50s, to get slow scan TV legalized. Now, as long as it's publicized, you can run almost any kind of mode. You can run sped spectrum. The whole idea is people think that it's an encrypted code. It is not encrypted.
And why I know.
Oh, Chris, I tried to call you earlier. Go ahead, Eric.
Illegal, you asshole.
Well, look, the reality is that right now, today, this minute, as I said from the beginning, because I read the rules, It's really a nomenclature issue. I agree with you, Howie, but the reality is that, like, if I want to transmit HVSV on 70 centimeters, I have to get an STA. That's just the way the law is. That's the way the rules are. If, as a broadcast station, I wanted to do a test with COFDM, I can't just do it. I got to get permission. I got to let them know what I'm doing. Not that I'd want to, but, you know, to be in compliance with the laws, that's what you got to do. I mean, you know, feeding is illegal. It doesn't stop feeding from people from feeding, but when they get caught, they get a big ticket. Don't be surprised if you get a big ticket, that's all.
Big ticket, then I'll see a lawyer in court and I'll win the case. The FCC would lose anyway. The FCC ain't going to spend the money and the time to do this because the FCC's got so many other things to deal with. I don't think they would take this on. If there's nothing in it for them to fight this. So they're just gonna look the other way.
It's illegal, Howie, you short fat retard. You're going straight to fucking jail.
Oh, you know, I believe in erring with caution, all right? You know, it's like, you may think that. You may think they not have the resources, but maybe they don't like you and they'll pick on you. You know, you're talking about the government here, and some things they do and some things they don't. Flip the coin and, you know, figure out which one it is. Otherwise, you're taking your chances, that's all. I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't. It's just entirely your prerogative of what you want to do. But until the rules get changed, which I'm sure they will, it's illegal.
Go to jail, Howie.
Okay, whatever you say. As far as the government picks and chooses. If they don't like you, then the government will fight you, and that's why you have a court system. That's why you have a court system to figure out who is right and wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, try to tell that people who have been victims of eminent domain. That's a good one.
Oh, I agree. Eminent domain. Well, it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and that took many, many years. That's another injustice.
Go to jail, Howie, when your boyfriend gave up.
Chris N1YNO, what's up?
About, what is it called? People United. That's a really good ruling, boy. That's got a lot of people upset.
Say that again. What ruling are you talking about, Eric? They stepped on you?
Jail.
That's the ruling where our Chief Justice actually pushed it through. That is the ruling that gives a corporation the rights of a person and allows them to pump as much money into political campaigns, amongst other things, without having to justify or show where the money came from.
I won't get it. I don't have a problem with that. I do have a problem where the government comes in and takes away property, and I do have a problem with a lot of things the government does. So we have different opinions, and it seems like a lot of people are very passionate about this DMR stuff, really getting uptight over it, because they're afraid the amateur radio is going to go all digital.
Go to jail, Howie.
Yeah, well, I have a major problem with corporate control, because, I mean, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. Actually, we're more oligarchy, which kind of like was what Hitler had before he really had power. I don't like the fact, the idea that a very large, powerful corporation can affect politics. I mean, we used to have something, which even the broadcasters hate, we used to have something called the Fairness Doctrine, which basically required you to have opposing points of view. So if you have a rightist point of view, you can counter it with a leftist, or you had to present the leftist point of view. Broadcasters hated it because they had to go out and find somebody to present an opposite point of view. So they didn't bother at all. But the problem here is that an educated electorate is how you have democracy. And if you keep telling someone that something is a certain way, whether it's true or not, they eventually believe it.
Yeah, but see, right now you have so many other ways. You don't need... The conventional way of getting information together is different than it was 20 years ago. Today you don't need a big radio station and a broadcasting company to get out your information. Anyone can put up a website and broadcast to the whole world. There's so many other ways of getting the information out. You have so much information out there. What can I say? Today, a small operation with limited resources can definitely get their message out. You don't need to spend, take out big ads on a TV station or in a newspaper. You got the internet, and a lot of people are walking around with iPhones. I agree with you. An educated public is the best defense.
Go to jail, how are you, fat retard? Go to jail with your boyfriend, Game On Howie.
Now, I'll give you something to think about then, Howard. Okay? Because everything is so economically driven in this country, how many homes have the internet? How many people have access to the internet? When the World Trade Center went down, even the FCC is wrong in terms of thinking about how many people are on cable. If you live in a big city, okay, and in that city, when the World Trade Center went down, and because we're a public television station, we found out that nearly 40% of our audience was on antennas. You know why? Because of economics. You think the avid poor person can afford cable? And unfortunately, in the city, you either have the very poor or upper middle class and rich. Middle class doesn't exist in that city anymore, does it?
Don't it, Howie?
I don't know what rich is. I don't know what the definition of rich is. At what price? All the friends that I know have internet and cable. And if you go into the what I would call city or federal housing projects, you'd be amazed at how many people have TVs and cable. So, yes. I don't know what it is today. You would have the better figures today. You would have the figures today, what the percentage of people have cable. But you have so many radio things. You have AM broadcast stations. There's just so many ways to get the information. That's all I'm going to say. But, yeah, I do think that this country is going in the wrong direction. And our friend Obama, that everybody voted for, he's going to get us into another war. Look what he's doing over in Libya. There's no difference between the past administration and this administration in a lot of ways.
Go to jail, Howie. Go to jail, you sure fat retard.
WB3HWWK2J. Well, I could have many hour-long discussions about this because, let's put it this way. If we go back to the days of Eisenhower and even Nixon, they would be considered extreme leftists by today's standards, What we call the left is, if we compare it to those days, is right of center. So, where the center is in a completely different place. And as far as radio stations and broadcasting goes, I'm sorry, there's only six organizations that own them. The independent local broadcaster doesn't exist anymore. That's why even places like Oklahoma and stuff with Clear Channel owns everything, they never get tornado warnings. They just hear music because it's automated. That's even happening in the big stations. A lot of guys out of work because everything's automated. You don't have cameramen in the studio anymore unless you have, a big live show. The news is done by one guy, the director. He operates the cameras, he operates everything else, all from his little console. And there's one audio guy, and there's one graphics person, and that's it. It used to be, a team of 10 or 12 people, and now it's done by three. So, time marches on. And unfortunately, because so few people own all the broadcast stations, they can produce news. We don't get news. We get the crime report, and we get the infotainment. There is no real honest reporting, and there is no... if you really want to get the news, you got to get it from outside this country.
By the way, what do you think of overnight radio, like what you have with Coast to Coast and what you have with the Red Eye, the guy at ABC? What's your opinion of those two shows and all the talk shows that are out there?
Oh, you mean all the right-wingers like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and all those crazy... I wouldn't even want to call them people because they're so ridiculous, it isn't funny. And people believe everything that they say, and they eat it up. I mean, even Fox News, you know, we report, you decide. It's more like they're really the propaganda arm of the Republican Party. Some people say they give the news, but they really don't. I mean, if you want the news, you got to check the BBC, which is even a little tilted these days, or the FR1, and the CBC seems to be the least biased of all of them. But, you know, the New York Times leans this way, the Washington Post leans that way, and we don't get the truth that much, so it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. I mean, you look at it in the past where news was a requirement to have your license, and it needed not to be affected by commercialism. Now, you know, our friendly Clinton, who finally killed the Communications Act of 1934, did away with all that stuff, and that's why we have some of the ridiculous radio and TV that we have now.
Plus, I know where you're coming from. I understand what's happening to PBS, and I can understand where you're coming from. I get my news from the Internet. I look at a lot of different stuff. I look at the CBC. I look at some of the other news that comes over. WNYC has overnight. But a lot of the other news, I'll tell you what, some of this, I like Artel, but some of this stuff that comes out of Limbaugh, I can't listen to it for more than 5 or 10 minutes. Some of those guys are just nutcases. I mean, you listen to them for a few minutes, and you want to puke.
K2YL. Howie, I'm with you. I work overnights occasionally, and I'm a fan of Coast to Coast, so I'm with you on that one, Eric.
Yeah, Bernie, but the unbelievable part is how gullible, and I hate to say it, but the American public is really not that intelligent, and the news that we give them kind of dumbs them down even more, so it's sad, but it's just the reality of things. How are you a fortunate person that you can go on, that you have a computer, and you can go online, and you can search for other sources of news? I mean, even, you know, anybody can write a blog and spit out their opinion. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the truth either.
But that's the whole idea. You got to be smart enough to figure it out, Eric. I don't want someone like you telling me who's smart and who's dumb. I mean, that's what... Well, what's the difference when you had people standing in a square yelling out ideas? That's freedom of speech. That's up to each of us to make a decision. And hopefully the public will make the right decision based on what you feel for. I mean... I don't know. I wouldn't go around and look. I thought the public was gullible with Obama. I didn't vote for this guy, so I think Obama has been a big disaster for this country. But then you're going to tell me that I'm totally wrong. What can I say?
No, I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong. I mean, he hasn't been a disaster, but he needs to grow a pair of things that hang down at the lower part of his legs. You know, he's one of those, not a pacifist, but he doesn't really want to bend anybody's nose out of shape, but it's not doing him any good.
I agree with him on a lot of his policies. I don't agree with him on the health bill, And believe it or not, I'm blind and I need health care, okay? And I do need, you know, I do need stuff, but I don't think this guy, I don't agree with him. I didn't agree with the guy. You know what? We need some, you know, I am conservative. I'm sorry to say, he's too liberal for me.
Connor, I wouldn't call him liberal at all. Not what I would consider liberal. He's pretty right. But not right enough for the extreme religious right that exists out there. But, you know, it will work itself out in the end. Either more bad things will happen, or some good things will happen. But, I mean, take a simple thing about why is the economy so bad? Why are there no jobs here? Well, take a company like Whirlpool that was in Massachusetts, right? Maytag, sorry. All right, so Maytag went to Mexico. Why? Because the labor's cheaper. Except that nobody seems to forget that because Maytag left, which supported like 350 independent small businesses, they went out of business because they had nobody to support. That's one thing. But, you know, there's a quick and easy solution to some of this, like what most other countries do. You want to buy an American-made product in Japan or in Europe, you're going to pay a 600% tariff. I mean, we buy stuff from China, which they make for, you know, they pay their people 50 cents an hour, and that's why we can go to Walmart and get it so cheap. If they made a level playing field by making the products that come in from the outside cost the same as it would to manufacture them here, you'd have manufacturing here.
I'm going to make a comment about that. I lived in Europe for a while back in the 90s, and when I used to shop, you would pay so much more for ridiculous things. People didn't have everything, okay? You know, I'd rather have the way we do it here. I don't believe in tariffs. If you really want to know why we're having these situations here, it's because government sticks its nose into everything. You know, if you want to open up a plan here, you got a million and one regulations. And a global economy, people are going to go wherever the labor is cheapest. That's just how life is. And when you try to artificially, why do we have a lousy economy? Because Bush screwed up, and did this guy screw up? One thing we did, we bailed everybody out. What we really needed to have is let a lot of these companies fail and clean out the system. That's what I really think we need. What we're winding up with, like Japan, we've got zombie banks. We're keeping everything together by artificial. We got the Federal Reserve pumping the hell out of the economy and printing money, and the dollar's worth like crap. So some people have to go out of business, because then people who know how to run a business will take its place. Yes, maybe you'll have some short-term pain, but then you also have the government that said everybody deserved a house. You know, they were giving mortgages out to bus drivers or to guys who only made $50,000, and they were buying a $1 million house. This was all because both the Republicans and the Democrats and Bonnie Frank said, hey, you know, we got to have our policy that everybody's got to have a house or a mansion and see what happened. So the bank said, well, the bank would not want to give out a loan in an area because they felt it wasn't profitable. The banks gave up. So what do the banks do? They figure out a way to make money. Believe me, you can blame a lot of what's happening in this economy, Eric, on the U.S.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Thank you, Wyo.
Hey, Wyo.
One of the fundamental problems is that we as consumers want cheaper goods. The rapid expansion of the economy that started in the 1950s, post-World War II, we want that new gadget, that new thing, and the only way that can continue to grow is to keep driving down manufacturing costs. And so while people scream that they want American-made goods, they'd much rather have cheaper goods, and that people aren't voting with their pocketbooks. If they truly wanted American-made goods, they wouldn't buy those cheap foreign goods. But no, we want the thing that's new and better, and therefore we will buy the cheaper thing. So we have Chinese goods. Every time we're given a buying choice, if I can get that big flat screen TV a little bit cheaper, I'll take the cheaper option. And who cares where it comes from? And that's what's causing U.S. jobs to go elsewhere, is that we as a people are not truly committed to keeping things here. Just my thought, Eric.
You know, on one hand, that's very true. But there's another end. It's more complex than that. I mean, why did we get into the banking problem? Oh, because we like to deregulate. So we deregulated commerce. We deregulated banks. And then the banks said, oh, let's just be greedy and get rich. There were a lot of, in Eisenhower's time in the 50s, you made over $1 million, you paid 91% income tax. But then again, at that point in time, I think it was like 1% had like 40% of all the wealth in the country. Now it's, I don't remember what it is. It's actually something greater than that. Now 2% of the multimillionaires have like 60% of the wealth in the country, something like that. It's ridiculous. And if you got that much money, sure, so to speak, but that doesn't happen. And Howie, when you were in Europe, one thing that you forget about Europe, you can call them socialist democracies or social democracies, but, they care about their people a lot more than they care about them in this country.
I don't know. I'm being pretty well taken care of in this country, and I'm getting some government help in some ways. Let me put it to you this way, Eric. And I lived in Greece I spent time going in Italy. I walked into stores, had to buy. I wasn't living in a hotel. I was actually living in an apartment building in Greece, outside of Saloniki, up in the mountains, with a lady friend. I get into that whole thing, but I saw what went on. But let me put it this way. Let me ask you a question, and I just want to know where you're coming from. So you agree that if somebody, you want to go back to the 1950s, so that if you made $1 million, you would pay 90 or 80 or 90% of your income would go to the government. Is that what you're saying? Is that where you're coming from?
That's actually a fact. Kennedy lowered it a little more. Johnson lowered it a little more. Nixon lowered it a little more. Okay, we could get rid of the deficit. Right now, the income for the very rich people without the tax loopholes is 34%. Originally, they wanted to raise it back to Clinton's time, which was 36%. That 2% increase would actually kill most of the deficit. But no, we can't do that. We've got to keep the Bush tax cut. If we got just let them expire, we'd be in better shape. But not the case. And, it's a more complex issue. And it's many, many things along the way. You know, the thing that makes this economy really work well is when you have a strong middle class. And all throughout the 50s and the 60s, you had a very strong middle class. You had the two-car family. The guy went to work. Mom could stay home. They made a decent living. They made enough money to put the kids in college. That no longer exists. So we only got about another 6 minutes of repeater time. So, Bernie, you got something to say? K2IO, K2J.
At this point, if you track the middle class, what's happened is inflation has driven the middle class out of existence. And fundamentally, in economics, one of the telltales of if a country is economically doing well is do they have a middle class. I agree with you that the middle class is getting squeezed bad, real bad. And that's why you're seeing a lot of the conservative reaction, I think, is coming from those middle class folks. It's what we call the flyover country. The country is a lot more conservative than the people on the coast want to believe. And that's where you're getting a lot of this right-wing reactionary stuff. So I don't have any answers for this. I'll be honest with you at this point. I'm not a big fan of exporting democracy anymore. My wife and I had this conversation this afternoon. I think we've made a huge mistake getting involved in Libya, and I think Gaddafi may be correct that the UN Charter says that they don't get involved in internal problems. He's got a civil war going on, so I'm not sure we should be over there, and I definitely don't think we should be over there mixing up in another Muslim country. Just my opinion. Howie?
Yeah, we should. I don't know what we should do. It's the oil, and we're playing games here, and this sort of bomb is no different than Bush. Okay, Eric, let me just say one thing. You and I totally disagree. See, I don't believe we should take, if someone makes $1 billion or $1 million, I don't want to tax them, because poor